On the program in this first hour, we will revisit a topic we've discussed before, not in a little while, though, and that is we'll be talking about genetically modified crops and GM food and what we know at this point about these crops, their potential environmental impact, their impact on human health. There continues to be a fair amount of concern about both of those issues out there and a lot of people in this country, a significant number of people in this country and around the world concerned about these foods. And so we have as our guest someone who is used to talking about these issues. Our guest is Bruce Chassie. He is the Associate Executive Director of the Campus Biotechnology Center here at University of Illinois. He is also Assistant Dean for Biotechnology and Outreach in the College of ACES, that stands for Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences, and he is Professor of Food Microbiology. By academic training, he is a chemist. He has a PhD in biochemistry from Cornell. He worked as a research chemist for the National Institute of Dental Research at the National Institute of Health for 21 years before he came to the U of I to head the Department of Food Sciences. After that department was merged with the Division of Foods and Nutrition, he was appointed head of the Department of Food Science and Human Nutrition and had that job until last May, May of last year when he took the job that he has now. He's been good enough to come over and spend some time talking with us, and we're pleased to have him as guest. Questions, comments certainly aren't welcome. All we ask of people is that you try to be brief, just so we can keep things moving along and get in as many different people as possible. But anyone's certainly welcome to call. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line, good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. At any point, you can certainly feel free to pick up the phone and give us a call. Well, thanks very much for being here.
Glad to be here.
The issues around GM crops get a fair amount of press, and certainly there's been a lot of discussion in media about them. At the same time, one wonders just how many, in terms of public interest and concern on that issue, how many people are concerned about GM crops. Now, certainly the people who are seem to be pretty vocal. But if you look at the general population, are there surveys that say where they've actually gone out and people and asked people, well, you know, are you concerned about these? Would you buy a genetically modified product? Are you buying genetically modified product? Do you have any idea if you're buying genetically modified product? And that may be a key question. What generally do we think people think about these?
Well, those are all great questions, and in keeping with us being maybe the most surveyed people in the world, there are surveys on each one of those questions by a number of different organizations. I wish I'd been writing them down and keeping track. Let me say, and I think the people that do survey research really understand this, that how you ask the question and whether it's open-ended or not has a terrific effect on what kind of answer you get. If you simply walk up to the average American consumer and say, what, if anything, concerns you about safety in the American food supply, nobody will mention biotechnology. Perhaps in some surveys, 1 or 2%. But people actually rather correctly know that it's foodborne illness that they have to worry about and contamination by microbes. Mm-hmm. And that's a big change in the last 15 years. People wouldn't have said that 15 years ago. But we've had all of the press about
E. coli and salmonella and stuff like that. Yeah.
So we're starting to get, you know, on target. Mm-hmm. Now, if you ask people, on the other hand, are they eating biotech foods today? Only about 40% of the people in this country understand that for the last 4 or 5 years we've had, you know, biotech soybeans, biotech corn. We had a Flavor Saver tomato. There have been a number of crops. And, you know, it's funny because that's been in the newspapers. It's certainly been no secret. And in fact, some of the biotech companies have had great hoopla and maybe hubris about how they've got these great new products out there. And by and large, consumers have ignored that, I think, because it's not really meaningful to them. They don't see any change in their food. The products were designed to be identical, and they are identical. And so it really hasn't been very remarkable. Another kind of question you can ask is, what, if anything, have you changed about your eating habits in the last year? Or in the last 3 months? And when you ask that question, again, biotech never comes up. On the other hand, if you ask people whether they want biotech to be labeled, they will say yes. Consumers want everything to be labeled. I think most of us want full information about everything. So, you know, that's not a surprise. But in a nutshell, I don't know if that answered all the questions.
Well, there seems to be a still small but growing number of people who are interested in organic products, who seem to be inclined to buy them, sometimes even if they're more expensive. And this seems to be sort of a component of that. Does anybody know what would happen, indeed, if we got to the point where GM products were labeled as such, how that would affect people's buying choices? And and how many people would just not paying attention to that and would just go right ahead and buy what they would have bought anyway? And how many people, particularly once you call their attention to the fact that it is, might they then actually pay more attention to it than they would have otherwise?
Great question. That's been surveyed at least twice in the last year. The International Food Information Council and the Center for Science and the Public Interest have both looked at that. What the Center for Science and the Public Interest survey found was that most Americans would consider a label that said GM or produced through biotechnology, would consider that a health warning. And the International Food Information Council survey asked the question in such a way that the answer that they got back was 47% of American consumers would not buy a product with such a label until they were given more information.
Mm-hmm. Well, obviously, the people who process and manufacture food don't want something on there that would discourage people from buying the product. The whole issue of labeling has been somewhat controversial. Where now do we stand in this conversation about whether or not if there's genetically modified product in a particular food, or we're just talking about the food itself, either we're talking about a tomato or we're talking about a bag of Fritos or something like that, whether or not it should say that on there?
Well, let me get you to back up a bit and let's do a little definitions. You know, we've been throwing around the term genetically modified product.
Okay.
Well, what exactly do we mean by that? We, of course, use enzymes in preparing food. We have laundry detergent enzymes. They're used in metal etching. I mean, just all these applications, many of them are engineered by biotechnology. We have a number of pharmaceuticals and drugs that are produced by biotechnology, genetically modified. We're even talking about using plants to produce pharmaceuticals and high-value proteins for medicine and human health. And then we get to biotech foods, and we still say, well, these are genetically modified. But the fact is that each one of them is an individual, and it has unique properties. It has unique environmental concerns, unique consumer and concerns, unique food safety concerns. So one of the things that those of us who work in the field try to do is get people to think about these things on a one-by-one basis. What are the issues with BT corn, for example? What are the issues with Roundup Ready soybeans, rather than lumping them all together under biotechnology? It is very clear that there are a number of people the world over who have misgivings about this technology, and those can be political, they can be social, they can be ethical, they can be economic, they can be opposed to world trade. In general, all of those people like to talk about biotechnology or genetically modified plants or foods in a big lump. They're all one thing, and really they're all bad as far as they're concerned. On the other side of it, those of us in science and in the regulatory system are compelled to look at them one by one and say, is this particular application of the technology good or bad? Does it have unacceptable risks, or does it have overwhelming benefits? And now, of course, I've forgotten the original question.
I think
it's important to make that distinction.
The question was about labeling, essentially. Where it's something that's been discussed, I'm sort of interested. Obviously, interest groups may have one position. The FDA may have a position. The Department of Agriculture may have a position. The Congress may have a position. I'm just sort of wondering where we are with this whole issue of whether or not that and food producers, I'm sure they have a position. Is there any sort of consensus about what kind of information should be on the product?
Well, that's exactly the problem, is what should be on the product. We know that if you simply say that it's genetically modified, that's a negative for people. And in fact, you know, it's important to recognize that most countries in the world have elected to label because they believe that the consumer right to know is more important than any possible negatives from putting a rather meaningless label on. The Center for Science and the Public Interest, who normally is a very strong advocate for consumer rights, says they're not so sure that labeling would mean anything to a consumer. They would interpret it as a health warning, which it, there's no evidence that there are, in fact, any safety or health concerns. And how would a consumer interpret that given, and this is why I mentioned that each one of these things is distinct, the concerns you would have with a Roundup Ready soybean are really different than the concerns you would have with a Starlink corn. Very, very different kinds of concerns. So what label do you put on there? Do you put a label saying this product may contain some ingredients? Because remember, when we eat a corn, we don't really usually eat corn. We eat starch that comes from corn. We eat oil that comes from corn. We eat oil that comes from soybeans. Many of these things are processed into ingredients that may have 20 or 30 different ingredients into a mixture that some food manufacturer buys and they put in their product. So they may not even know whether they come from genetically modified. So it becomes very complex, and there is no way to give a consumer meaningful information. And I think the FDA here has said using a broad brush and saying genetically modified is a sort of a political statement that doesn't relate to either safety or consumer information. I mean, basically, we put labels on things to avoid fraud or misrepresentation and to warn consumers if there are safety concerns. On the other hand, the FDA has said here that if you substantially change a product, if I change the composition of a soybean, or I change the composition of corn, I can't sell that as corn. I have to put a label on that because what's meaningful to the consumer is that compositional change, that it's no longer the same product. So we actually have a labeling law that says biotech has to be labeled if it changes something. The rest of the world says we don't care if anything's changed. It's just got to be labeled.
Mm. Well, then that comes to the question of what do we consider a change and whether it has to be labeled or not. Because I suppose some people would say, well, a soybean's a soybean. Other people would say, well, but if we've changed the altered the genetic makeup of the soybean, it's not what it was before. It's something that didn't even exist before. It's brand new.
Right on. I mean, that is exactly the problem. And I think you said it very well. What you consider a change determines on which side of the line you come down. And you know, you've got to be fair to the people who are concerned about this technology. They see that insertion of a gene as a substantial and material change and do not consider it the same thing. And to them, it wouldn't qualify, say, as organic food, wouldn't be anything they'd want to eat. And, you know, consumers make choices that aren't driven by logic or science necessarily. We're allowed to have emotional reactions to foods. We're allowed to have preferences. And if you just don't like biotech foods because you think that's a change you don't want to accept, there's no way that you're wrong. You're the one making the purchase and consuming the food. Mm. That's your choice. And that's the dilemma with the labeling issue. We have held that the products that are on the market so far, we being the FDA and our regulatory system, are in fact not materially different because you can analyze for every known constituent. You can do chemical and biochemical determinations, and you can show that there are no changes in the soybean that are measurable or no changes in the corn that are measurable. I heard someone from Monsanto the other day said that they had done 300,000 compositional analyses on different varieties of their biotech corn, and every one of them fell within the range of normal for some 50 ingredients. Well, to them, obviously, that's no change. But if you're looking at the one gene they put in and you're saying, well, that's different and I don't want to eat it, then we have a dilemma.
Yeah. So I guess the bottom line at this point is we still haven't decided how really we want to deal with this.
That's correct. Sometimes I think the easiest way to deal with this is to put may contain genetically modified ingredients on everything that's in the normal food supply and move on and let those people who don't want to eat those kinds of products do much as they've had to do today, which is to resort to organic foods. You know, a lot of the people who have misgivings about biotechnology have misgivings about other aspects of the safety and nutritional value of our food supply. And, you know, that's not what this program's about. And you've had discussions of organic and whole foods and, you know, natural and foods on this program before. But if you're in that category where you don't feel your safety is being regulated sufficiently by the government, or that you don't feel that the mass-produced foods that we get in the supermarket are providing you and your family proper nutrition. And it doesn't come as any surprise to me that biotech falls outside your realm of interest, and that you would, you know, avoid it. Yeah.
Well, we I have several callers now. We want to get to them, and we'll get them in the order they came in. And I just should, though, introduce again our guest. We're speaking with Bruce Chassie. He is a professor of food microbiology at the University of Illinois. He's also associate executive director of the Campus Biotechnology Center. And we're trying to do a review of some of what we know at this point about how people think about biotech foods, what we know about their potential health impacts. We may get into some environmental issues as well. Whatever's on your mind, you can certainly call in. And I know that Professor Chassie will give you the best response that he can. 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line. Go to anywhere you can hear us, 800-222-9455. The first caller is in Champaign County, and that will be line one. Hello.
Hi. I only have a moment. I'd like to go on for a while because it is a complicated issue, but it's interesting to note that the spin on the first part of the show is basically this is a PR problem, and I'm critical of GM foods, and I think the calling them frankenfood shows you where it's coming from. It's basically a distrust of science, which I think is warranted to some extent because the modern age is full of great advances by sciences, but there are a lot of unintended consequences that science has wrought on people that makes them suspicious. And I think that the most persuasive arguments I have about, and that I've heard about GM foods is not so much maybe the effect directly on the people, but there are a lot of problems like, well, BT corn, BT potatoes. What do we do when that, you know, widespread, indiscriminate use of this toxin creates organisms, insects that are no longer affected by it? Well, we need to escalate, and Monsanto needs to sell another product. And it's got a sort of its own obsolescence built into it, which is maybe a great long-range corporate strategy. But it's not good for, I think, in the long run, the health of the earth, actually. I think that I'm all for research. I just am very suspicious of all of the corporate, unpeer-reviewed, and this might be something that you can actually agree with me on, research that's going on. I'd rather see it go on in institutes and in academia where there's more peer review and there's more, I think, attention, more likely to be attention to long-term consequences rather than the short-term bottom line. So that's my general statement. I just also, people are not against world trade, as you kind of glibly, and I suppose that's just a conversational advice, but I think a lot of people believe that. People are against world trade. That does not help anybody but the corporations. Exploitative jobs in Malaysia don't help a worker in South Carolina. They undercut his price, and they don't help the worker particularly, though you'll hear arguments to the contrary. And that is also another subject, but I just it's just easy to say that people are against world trade without saying that it's easy for people to say that people are against globalization. Well, they're against corporate globalization, where the values and the goals of this globalization are determined by elites and not you know, democratically reviewed and that sort of thing. Anyway, I'll hope some other people join in the argument with this kind of attitude, and I'll listen to Professor's answer.
Very good. Thanks for the call. Why don't we maybe agree to leave that point aside, because I think it's, as the caller points out, I think that's another show. The first two points the caller raises give us enough. We could talk about that for the rest of the time almost. But I'm interested in your comments about that. The first point is, again, it's one that a lot of people have made, is we've taken this quote-unquote natural pesticide that a lot of organic producers use, Bacillus thuringiensis, and we built it into the plant. And the question is, what happens if we plant wall-to-wall in this country plants that have this? We can expect within a relatively short period of time that we would suddenly find that the insects are now resistant to Bacillus thuringiensis. It means it won't be good to anybody. The organic producers won't be able to use it anymore. Nobody will be able to use it anymore. And the only people that ultimately will benefit are the people who will come along and make whatever the next thing is going to be. What about that?
There's certainly something to it, because from the very beginning of evaluating these technologies from an agricultural and environmental point of view, the scientists for the EPA and the scientists for the companies and university scientists all got together and thought about resistance management, because it is, in fact, as the caller points out, a likelihood that if you keep using high levels of any pesticide indiscriminately, you are going to get resistant organisms selected. Insects are quite good at doing this. And in fact, we already know with BT, the insecticidal protein used in biotech corn, that that's going to happen, because BT has been used for over 40 years in organic agriculture and in forestry. And it's a very effective insecticide control. It's actually one of the few they have in organic agriculture. But one of the consequences of the previous use of BT in a non-biotech way is that we know that you can select resistant organisms. Specifically, the Western diamondback moth has there are resistant variants out there because of the conventional use of BT. So a management scheme had to be put in place with these new plants. I'd like to suggest to the caller another way of looking at this. While it's possible planned obsolescence is a good thing for a company, given the multi-million dollar investment it takes to develop one of these new biotech products, keeping their intellectual property in play and being able to use a biotech corn, for example, for as many years as possible is actually in the best interest of the company, because there isn't, in fact, necessarily a whole shelf full of alternatives for them, and they're trying to guard those alternatives. Now, I don't know which actually plays out, but what I do know is that the EPA requires the company to show that they have a resistance management scheme, which includes a refuge of 20% of the crop is non-biotech, and that's supposed to wash out any resistant insects. But I think the overriding important point is that there is post-market surveillance. Every year, fields are surveyed for the presence of resistant insects, and that management scheme has to be changed if resistance is cropping up. And these products may have to be taken off the market in certain places if resistance becomes a problem. And that's just the rules of the game. So it's a real issue.
Okay. Well, and then let's try to talk a little bit about the other point. I think that the concern has been raised by some folks that the amount of money that the federal government has to test the kinds of products we're talking about is wholly inadequate to the task, and that we are relying primarily on the manufacturers to do the testing and for them to tell us that these products are safe. True? Not true? And is that something we should worry about?
Yeah, absolutely true. Well, I don't know if we should worry about it, but it's absolutely true. I think the speaker has a good point here. You shouldn't find it surprising as a university faculty member that I believe that we should have more federal funding for doing independent evaluative research, not because I think that there is any problem with the data that the companies have provided. In fact, I haven't seen any evidence of any kind of impropriety or irregularity in companies producing data. It's, in fact, the way our regulatory system works in this and most other countries, is that when a company wants to put any kind of product or technology that's regulated on the market, they provide the data and the government regulators decide whether they believe it or not. That's just our paradigm. And I haven't seen that there's anything wrong with that. But, I agree with the caller that good peer-reviewed science that corroborates and extends and maybe looks at things that a company wouldn't look at necessarily, in a more holistic system-wide way, as we're able to do at the university, would be a great idea. And I have been an advocate, and I hope some of the people who oppose this technology would advocate for getting more government funding. Again, not because there is a problem, but because it's a good way to avoid having a problem with the data.
Okay. We are at our midpoint already, and we are talking here this morning with Bruce Chassy. As I said, he's professor of food microbiology at University of Illinois. He also is the associate executive director of the Campus Biotechnology Center. And we'd be very happy to take questions, comments, whatever on people's minds. So something, though, we need to do here real quick, something that we do every month. This is a test of the emergency alert system. This is Focus 580, our telephone talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us this morning. We have some other callers here, but before we go on, I think you did want to respond to another of the comments of the first caller, perhaps because you felt that either you had said something you didn't really intend to say, or perhaps were misunderstood, and on the global trade issue.
Yeah, well, I think the first caller suggested that I believe this was a perception problem or a spin problem of some kind. Mm. I think it's much more fundamental than that, and I certainly didn't mean to say that. Yeah, and I don't think it's an advertising or education or an advertising or marketing kind of problem either, because, you know, I think it really is an information problem. And, you know, with regard to global trade, I think biotechnology has become a lightning rod for a number of issues that we really need to be talking about and having a dialogue about. The caller referred to having an argument on this subject. I don't want to have an argument. I want to have a dialogue where we can constructively move forward. And some of those issues are, you know, food safety issues and environmental safety issues certainly have to be thought of. But, you know, the corporate control and concentration is an issue. There are ethical implications of using this technology that concern some people. There are issues about consumer choice and what consumers have a right to know or should know. There's a question about distribution of benefits versus risks. Who's benefiting here and you know, who's taking the risk? And finally, there's this globalization and trade issue, and biotechnology is just a small part about that. But those are all important issues that mm-hmm. we need to get straight as a society, and in no way do I want to belittle them.
Sure.
People come from different points of view to the biotechnology discussion and with different things on their mind, obviously.
Mm. Well, perhaps, you know, if I had started the discussion with a different question, we might have been at a different point at this point, and I don't know that I had a particular agenda in raising those points. But I guess what is fair to say, or at least is my perception, though, that a lot of people within the biotech industry community do indeed feel that this is a public relations issue. And if they had started out trying to persuade people persuade consumers that this technology would benefit them, rather than the perception that I think got out there was that, well, mostly it was there maybe to benefit farmers to help them control their input costs, and didn't necessarily end up with a better food product, and maybe didn't necessarily even end up with greater yields, just cutting down on production costs for farmers, that the bottom line really didn't mean much of anything to consumers. I think that people in industry think, you know, if we had spun this differently at the beginning, we wouldn't have, there wouldn't be such a negative perception of these products.
I think there's some of that. I've heard that. I think you describe it very well. I think there's another element in industry who believes had we had more of a dialogue and more good information. You know, there's a difference between education, information, and spinning things. Mm-hmm. I think there are some in industry who have finally realized that it's a lot bigger than an issue than they thought it was. I think in a way they got blindsided a little bit. Maybe they talked themselves into this, but they felt the changes they were making were very innocuous, and that since the composition was the same, it was no big deal. And in fact, their very first product, the Flavor Saver tomato, was supposed to be an obvious consumer benefit, a tomato that tasted more vine ripened. Didn't, but that's beside the point. It was a great idea. So, you know, that may have lulled them into a false sense of security, especially since all of this appeared in the newspaper. And so, you know, they thought they had this great technology. If you're in the private sector and you have a product, you advertise a product. I mean, you talk positively about your product, and you don't look for problems with consumer acceptance. And I think they're probably quite surprised. But on the other hand, it's taken a lot of work to make this a issue for a lot of people. The people that oppose the technology have spent a lot of money, a lot of time, a lot of effort to clearly frame their issues and get their message across to the consumer. Given the low level of information that people have and the low level of awareness that people have in general about biotech, frankly, it's surprising, given the amount of effort that the people who are concerned about the technology have put into basically trying to get the consumer to reject the technology. Most consumers today would not reject the technology, would not be concerned about it, were it not for the efforts of people who have voiced concerns. And I'm not sure that the industry could have seen in advance that the advocacy against the technology would be as effective mm-hmm. or as far-reaching as it's been.
Well, let's talk with some other folks. We'll go to a Champagne caller here. This is line 2. Hello.
Well, I'm not sure I quite buy that last argument, but what I wanted to go back to the issue of labeling that you raised initially and whether or not there was a substantial change. And I would say that despite whatever public rhetoric corporations might use, the mere fact that they think they've changed it enough that they have, you know, a right to patent something is prima facie evidence in and of itself that there's a substantial change.
Well, it sounds like a fairly strong argument.
Yeah. I think that's a point of view. I have no argument with that.
Okay, well, I just think that, you know, truth in advertising is a good thing, and, you know, I think it's better to have more information. People can make their choices. The idea that, you know, corporations can just voice things off on us and, you know, have docile consumers, I think that, you know, educated consumer is a good thing.
I absolutely agree with that. No problem.
All right.
All right. Let's go to another Champagne caller. This is line 3. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I'd like to mention a few things and then have you respond, please, afterwards. First, you mentioned earlier in your program that no one mentions biotech concern with a survey. Partly it is because the information is being withheld from us here in this country, and the information on E. coli and other things is not being withheld from us. So it's not that we're ignoring it or that we have an opinion that's not too concerned. It's the fact that we're uninformed because essentially our press right now, which is owned by a handful of corporations, is censoring the information we're getting. A point in case is this, that Arpad Pusztai in the United Kingdom did some research in 1998 in Scotland, and it found that the genetic engineering process itself, not the individual unique organism, so when you say we should look at each organism that's genetically modified, he found that the process itself of transgenesis he did his research on mammals, and that it showed evidence of organ damage, thickening of the small intestine, and poor brain development. It was not from the actual lectin that was put into the gene, but it was from the process itself. He went on the show in Britain called The World in Action. There was so much furor publicly because of what's, you know, the information, that he was fired the next day. His director said that the research did not exist and seized the data and halted 6 other projects, only to find out that Monsanto had given that institute a grant of $224,000 in the weeks before. Later on, his information came out in Lancet, the British medical journal, and because the information showed up in an internal audit, and it showed that, yes, these indeed were, you know, this research had happened. Since then, the FDA in our country has been allowing these kind of genetically modified things without prior safety testing, like they've not done with other things. So they're favoring the food manufacturer at the expense of us, the consumer, and there has been no independent or federally sponsored research on genetically engineered food in the United States or the United Kingdom since then. So the fact that you're saying that people aren't concerned, it's not logic, people's response, it's just emotional. Just because your logic is the only thing that's available to us as a consumer doesn't mean that your logic presides and that our response is an emotional one.
I need to get a response from the guest because we're getting really short on
that out, because I feel like he probably gets funding from Monsanto or other corporations. And so it behooves him to put out this information in his, you know, in his slant, when we are not being given the information because of no research and an essential censoring of our press by corporations.
Well, Professor
Chesney. Let me pick up on that. First of all, I take no funding from any corporations. I don't have any research grants, and I'm beholden to no one. In fact, my purpose here is to do a critical and independent and as objective analysis as I can. Mm-hmm. That said, all of us come to the table with beliefs, prejudices, and preferences. I probably view the world very different. Excuse me?
What about the research on genetically engineered things that is not being done here?
Well, if you could give me a chance to answer that.
Please, go ahead.
Um, I don't know how to say this. I mean it in the most politest way. You and I have an enormous difference of opinion in interpreting items of fact. And I think there are a number of things that you said that I have no doubt that you believe your sources where you get them from. And it's a good opportunity for us at the Academy to do what we do best, which is look for corroborative evidence, do critical thinking, qualify authorities, and you know all the rest of it. I think, and look for you know what peer-reviewed evidence there is. I would point out that Putztai's paper that you mentioned was not only not peer-reviewed, it was rejected by all the reviewers who looked at it, who said that it should not be published. When there was a Royal Society hearing on what the paper was about, they concluded, and he agreed, that no meaningful scientific conclusion could be drawn from his studies.
But why?
Why one would seize that particular study when there are literally dozens of other published animal studies that show no effects in animals, to me suggests that you are looking for the study that proves your point of view and want to ignore the 20-some-odd other animal studies. And I refer you to a review done recently by Professor Jimmy Clark in Animal Sciences, which is available on the net, where he carefully reviews those peer-reviewed scientific studies of the effect on animals of eating GM foods. Now, excuse me, I have a right to respond to this question.
I would appreciate it if because we didn't interrupt you when you were making your point, so why don't you let the guest do the same.
Now, it is, in fact, not the case that these things are allowed on the market without prior safety testing, without either government or university testing. There are literally hundreds of studies out there. It's not all done by the companies. And on the other hand, I agreed with the earlier talker, and I would agree with you, that it would be nice if we had more capacity to do independent studies. One of the reasons that I took the position I'm in is to try to catalyze more of that kind of study here and to see if we couldn't develop expertise in this area, because I personally am more comfortable with our answers to questions. The most important point that you made, and I want to sort of close with this, is that information is being withheld from us and that the press is censoring it. I absolutely reject that. I suggest you read Professor Earl Abbott at Iowa State University's studies of what the press is doing with biotech information, basically extremely biased against the biotech industry and extremely biased against biotechnology. Over 90% of the stories that appear on television, radio, and in the print media about biotech are negative and relatively unbalanced. And they did this by looking at literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of reporting events. I think the information's out there. The challenge is to sort out what's good information and what's bad information. I would describe, for example, what happened to Putzai, who violated a no publication order of his institute, very, very differently than you do. And what we need to do is chase down the facts of the situation. They're there. There's no censorship here.
Well, I've been in Europe before, and I realize that they do have access to more information than we are getting here. And I have, you know, there are other sources of information that you can read that are not being allowed in the mainstream press, is what I'm speaking about. And the research, I do not trust a research or a company being their own watchdog.
Yeah, let me pick up on that. I think you're right on that. I wouldn't trust a company being their own watchdog either. The federal government regulators and the scientific advisory panels that work for them, and I've been on the FDA's food advisory panel, so I know how this works, and I've seen it in action. Their job is to review the company's data and hold their feet to the fire to qualify that data and to make sure that it's good and that nothing's being withheld or distorted by the company. There are checks and balances in that process, but if we had, as you suggest, to just trust the company, I'd be completely on your side about that. I wouldn't like that kind of system either.
I want to jump in here. I hope the caller will forgive me, but we just have about 7-8 minutes, and I have several other callers, and I'd like to give one or two other people a chance. And also mention real quick, our guest is Bruce Chassie from the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. He's Associate Executive Director of the Campus Biotechnology Center. He's also Professor of Food Microbiology, and we're talking about some of the issues raised around biotech crops. We'll go on here. The next person in line is in Southern Illinois, line number 4. Hello.
Thank you very much for having me on. if people want to become informed on this issue, I drove from Chicago to where I live in southern Illinois yesterday and read the Sierra Club's July-August magazine, and they have formed an engineering committee allied with concerned citizens and scientists, organic farmers, religious groups, and they are calling for a moratorium on the planting of the genetically engineered crops until the long-term environmental and health impacts have been assessed. And if they want to get information, they can contact www.sierraclub.org/biotech. And they have several articles in here. They've devoted most of the issue to some of the pertinent facts on what bioengineering is doing to our society, our ground. Monsanto has received a tripling from the EPA, a tripling allowance for Roundup-ready release on their crops. And it has already been linked to Hodgkin's lymphoma. It's a cancer of the white blood cells. And I live in agricultural area. My neighbor has Roundup-ready soybeans growing right now. And I'm wondering, when it goes into my well and my children get cancer or someone else's, will these companies be held responsible? They have article after article about how BT corn is being tested on its safety for green lacewings or other butterflies and their possible harm to these insects. How are they going to correct that? I'm emotional right now. I cannot believe I was so wound up after reading this magazine. And I don't think Sierra Club is just a bunch of emotional people. It's scientists. It's people like a farmer in Nebraska who has been growing organically, and now the drift from the organic from his farm, from the biotech corn, is going on over to his organic farm and altering it. I'd really love to have your response to these questions.
Yeah, and they're all excellent questions, and we only have about 5 minutes and not nearly enough time to get into all of these issues.
You can get the Sierra Club.
Well, and, you know, this is something we've talked about before on the show with different people, and I promise you this will not be the last show that we ever do on these issues.
Your show is wonderful.
Well, thanks. Many, many things we can take up, and I expect would take up on future shows. Having said that, I don't know what would you like to pick, try to say a couple things about.
Yeah, let me make a quick response. First of all, I would recommend that everybody go to the Sierra Club site, too. I would suggest that people go to all the sites from the groups that oppose this technology and carefully read what they have to say. Look for their peer-reviewed publications. Look for their leading scientists that support that position. You know, the National Academies of Sciences of most countries, the regulatory agencies of countries around the world, the science professional societies and the medical societies in most countries around the world have actually endorsed a point of view that's opposite from the Sierra Club. So I think it is important for people who are interested to go read what they're saying and then go to the U.S. government websites from the regulatory agencies or to go to ift.org, which is the food technology website. That's www.ift.org. Or to get a book called Pandora's Picnic Basket by Alan McEwen, published by Oxford University Press in October of 2000. I'll repeat that, Pandora's Picnic Basket. And get as much information as you can. But what I'd ask you to do is get a balanced point of view and read both sides of the story. Let me end this comment by showing you the kind of thing that you can discover. The Sierra Club talking about Hodgkin's lymphoma coming from the use of glyphosate or Roundup is absolutely factually inaccurate and discredited. And there are a lot of things like that on that site. In the study that they cite, which was looking, it was a European study looking for the effects of glyphosate or Roundup. 4 people died of Hodgkin's lymphoma in the control groups, which were people who came from an area where the herbicide wasn't used, and 4 people died of Hodgkin's lymphoma in the area where it was used. And they concluded because people died in the area where it was used that it causes Hodgkin's lymphoma. And they continue to say that in spite of the fact that the scientific body who looked at the data said there's no meaningful difference between these.
What about the issue of unintended damage to insects that we'd like to keep, along with getting rid of the bugs we don't want? people will recall the monarch butterfly issue, and it looks like maybe some people are looking at some other insects too. You know, the question is, what if we put those out? We put these out in the environment. Could we end up killing off some insects that we would rather not?
Well, you know, quick answer is there's no way that a biotech crop can be more damaging to insects than the use of broad-spectrum pesticides. So if my comparison is pesticide versus BT corn, I'll take the BT corn. But it is also the case that sometimes, like with corn borer, a farmer may not use pesticides at all. And so then you have a different risk equation. You have to ask, does the BT corn bother insects? There has been a very large study because of the monarch butterfly publications that came out a couple of years ago saying that it might, BT corn might hurt monarch butterflies. And the conclusion is that while 95% of all monarch butterfly larvae die before they reach adulthood from various natural courses, one in 100,000 might conceivably be killed by BT corn, which is far less than pesticides and other unnatural things that might happen to them. There really is no risk. Does that mean that we should accept these in a blanket sort of way? No, we should continue to look for any environmental impacts, and we should ask the companies to provide data that they're not adversely harming the environment.
Okay. Well, we're going to have to stop. I'm sorry we have some callers that we can't take, but as I said to earlier caller, I'm sure on other programs we'll be talking about these issues with other guests and with other perspectives, so stay tuned. For the moment, we want to say to our guest, Bruce Chassie, thanks very much for being here. We appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Bruce Chassie is Associate Executive Director of the Campus Biotechnology Center here at University of Illinois and also Professor of Food Microbiology.